Hi everyone, and thanks for tuning in to the UBS Global Research Pod Hub, a channel that shares insights from economists, strategists, and equity analysts on the pivotal questions and events shaping today's markets. My name's Paul Schneider, a product manager here at UBS, and I'm here today with Aaron Kapton, Chief Economist, Banu Bawaja, Chief Strategist, and Jonathan Pingle, our Chief US Economist, all from UBS Investment Bank. It's been an intense month from a macro perspective, and we're recording this podcast at the start of May, 1 month on from Liberation Day. Gentlemen, thank you for joining me. So where do we stand?
Well, we have a lot of tariffs in place. I mean, the April 2nd announcement came out. There was a certain amount of shock and awe with the scope and scale of what was announced. The administration did postpone a portion of the reciprocal tariffs. They also have changed, not the messaging, but they have, you know, made a number of clarifying announcements to reduce some overlap. They included some carve-outs, but we have to remember that many of those carve-outs are for items and goods that they intend to tariff under other procedures and investigations. In the end, a month on, we are still facing a substantial increase in tariffs. If we look at the tariffs in place today, and they've just rolled in the auto tariffs last week, we're looking at a tenfold increase on the notional tax on U.S. imports. And even if we, you know, listened to some of the rhetoric and thought that, hey, the China tariffs might get walked back to some sort of midpoint or closer to the 60% mentioned on the campaign trail, it would still be an eightfold increase in the notional tax on U.S. imports. So where do we stand? We have raised taxes on $3.2 trillion of U.S. goods imports substantially, and they're in place.
Thank you for that, John. Banu, clearly it's been an uncertain time. When we look at the market response over the last few weeks, what's been the response and feedback from investors?
So it's been mixed, right? I mean, there was an initial phase of panic, but since then, the market really has gone back to its view that tariffs really are just transactional. They're just negotiating tools, and the market has felt better about it. I have to say that it seems that the sentiment from investors is a little bit worse than what the price action betrays, right? The price action has been better, probably because retail investors have been doing what they've been doing since 2020, which is to buy the dip. And so retail really hasn't gone out of this market, whereas most institutional investors are quite worried. But even if I was to sort of give you a view of the overall client base, I would say that tariffs are not being fully priced. And not only the tariffs that are currently in place, which is, as we're recording this, 145% tariffs on China and a 10% universal tariffs, not only is that not in place, but even a much lower level of tariffs, let's say 50 to 60% of tariffs on China plus a 10% universal tariffs, are not being priced. So I think it's fair to say that the market is, in our opinion, incorrectly looking through these tariffs and thinking they will not likely be around for as long or with the same degree of high tariff rate. So the market's thinking tariffs come down quickly. It's just a negotiating tool. It'll go away. We're not so sure.
Thank you for that, Banu. And I guess, Aaron, question for yourself. In that backdrop, and given what Barney's just said, what's the assessment thus far of the hit to confidence when we look at the real-world backdrop?
Well, so the hit to confidence looks very large, right? So it's one factor in trying to figure out what does this mean for the whole world, and particularly in the U.S. So if you look at the U.S., the average of the sort of U.S. business and consumer surveys have moved lower by something like 4 standard deviations, right? So that is almost a COVID-like drop in confidence. And if you look certainly through the end of March, it was really the U.S. surveys and confidence that were moving, and the rest of the world wasn't really moving that much. Now, that started to change in April. So early indications are that now also in global surveys or other country surveys, we see that confidence drop. And it just looks outside the U.S., I would say it looks like a big drop, but it's certainly not historic. Inside the U.S., it really looks like a historically large drop. Now, the tricky thing is then figuring out what that actually means. So one thing you can do is you can run what we call, you know, FARS or impulse response functions to try to isolate how much every standard deviation move in confidence is worth on GDP growth. And the worrying thing is then that the models implied that is worth more growth drag than the entire forecast revision that has so far been made by all the banks collectively. So I think everyone is really struggling, particularly I think with this confidence aspect, because it's so large and it's sort of the shock is sort of so unprecedented. You're basically reversing about 100 years of trade liberalization of the large economy, that I think the way this is creeping into everyone's forecast is very incremental and cautiously. So my worry is we're actually underestimating, I think, the impact of some of these confidence effects.
Perhaps picking up on that, John, looking at one of the things you said a few weeks ago when we were looking at some of the research you published, you mentioned the end of the Great Moderation. Do you think this is the end of that phase that we've seen in terms of U.S. macro?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we've written, we did a three-part series over 3 years on sort of being in a new era of macroeconomic volatility, which, is part of what has been ending here. But I think what's happening now is the end of something even longer. I mean, if we thought about the multi-decade trend towards globalization, I think at this point, we can call the end of that direction of travel. And this has certainly been a month where the policies being put in place would seek to throw that in reverse and fundamentally change the economic relationship between the United States and the rest of the world. And this does seem to be a particular policy outlook. Now, we can debate whether this is right or wrong over the next 10 to 15 years for U.S. workers. I mean, there's a lot of complicated both economic and social issues that have affected the loss of U.S. manufacturing jobs and the hollowing out of the middle class in recent decades. But there is an effort afoot to confront globalization and reindustrialize the U.S. economy. And Scott Bessent, the Treasury Secretary, in his Wall Street Journal op-ed, he finished that with his concluding paragraph being, "This is how we restore the working class, reestablish the U.S. as an industrial powerhouse, and right the wrongs of lopsided trade policies. This is how we pave the way for Wall Street's next 40-year run while making sure Main Street runs alongside it." So that was his concluding paragraph in his outline of the administration's economic policy in the Wall Street Journal this week. And I think that is fundamentally a very different direction than what we have seen in the global economy and trends for the last 7 decades.
Barney, given what John has just referenced there in terms of the ideological or perhaps some of the principles being outlined by the administration, how do you think investors see that from a point of view of being buyers of perhaps the U.S. market equity from an equity perspective over the next several decades?
Yeah, it's interesting. I'd again say, Paul, that this is not priced, right? Because if we take John's view that this is the end of the end, as he said to me once, of the Great Moderation, because it's been happening for some time. And if this really is the final nail in the coffin, then what was sort of the hallmark of the Great Moderation in markets? It was low macro and therefore low equity volatility. Right. So if macro volatility is rising, then equity volatility will rise. Now, we don't have very good forwards for equity volatility going out several years, but we do have inflation forwards and we do have growth forwards where you can look at earnings growth expectations over the next 12, 24, 36 months. And you have to say that when you look at inflation expectations, five-year forward, or you look at earnings expectations, the market seems to be extrapolating what has happened in the last 10, 15, 25 years into the next 5 to 10 years. So I don't think market's taking cognizance of this change, this seminal change in globalization and potentially the Great Moderation. Now, there are a few trends that are changing. Globalization clearly is one of them. The Great Moderation is another. And there are a few trends that are not. For instance, the move away from the material to the intellectual in terms of investment, so move towards technology, move towards artificial intelligence, that, if anything, is accelerating. You'd go through periods of 3 months, 6 months, where tech stocks may not be as much in demand as they were in the last 3 years, but really that's one trend that we think is going to outlive the decline of the Great Moderation or the decline in globalization. So that trend continues. So it is complicated. Some trends are moderating. specifically globalization, and that should mean higher equity volatility, potentially much lower returns. But the sectors that the markets are likely to buy, for instance, tech, for instance, healthcare, and therefore the regions that are overweight on these sectors, like the US, they should remain long-term winners. I'm not making a three-month point, but those sectors should remain long-term winners.
In that sense, you know, to what extent can we really not see tariffs just as a bargaining chip? And actually, this is much more of an ideological shift in policy that you're seeing from the US administration that isn't going to be rolled back quickly if we are heading into the phase you just described.
If they were going to be rolled back quickly, I don't see them being rolled back quickly. And also, you know, if I think about the communications coming from the administration, I mean, I really don't want to put words in their mouth, but, you know, the president on the 100 days, the speech in Michigan, you know, he was really advocating for this as a policy. And there are a lot of parts of the United States that really embrace, to some extent, the protectionism, and with some validity. You know, there's a lot that has been written both in the academic literature as well as political science and sociology about, you know, sort of the unfairness of uncompetitive trade practices, which is incredibly sympathetic and powerful argument. But that's not to say that some of this broader deglobalization won't have other costs to be considered.
Perhaps on that point of other costs, Aaron, from a more global macro perspective, where do we think of it, or how do you think inflation will head from here in this backdrop?
Well, so the amazing thing is, you know, a lot of people, I think 6-9 months ago, thought of tariffs as being sort of stagflationary. And tariffs are really only inflationary if you raise tariffs, right? So the only transmission channels are, do you lift your own import prices by tariffs, or, you know, does your currency depreciate in response to the tariffs? And so what's globally happening right now is that effectively, in contrast to all the models, you know, we're not really seeing currencies depreciate versus the dollar. So that neutralizes one channel. We're not really seeing anybody retaliate outside of Canada and China. We have lower energy prices. We have what appears to be a larger confidence and potentially global growth shock. So these are all sort of disinflationary forces. And so when you add it all up, then this year, outside the US, we think the net impact on inflation is zero or negative. Now, inside the US, and Jonathan can speak to that, we think it's a very large inflation impact because the US is facing all of the tariffs that it's imposing in all these other countries. But most of the other countries are just facing one tariff, which is the US tariff. So this is a very asymmetric distribution here of the inflation costs, with it basically sitting almost entirely in the US and not outside the US.
When do you think we'll see that asymmetry come through in terms of real world impact, John, in the US on the ground?
Well, I mean, we think we're going to start to see some of it in the April CPI data released next week. Now we've got an above consensus 32-point gain on core, and some of that is because of our expectations that you start to see some of the front-end impact of these tariffs on goods prices. Now, there's also going to be a lag as well, right? I mean, the CPI samples every other month. You know, there's items in inventory or in transit. But in general, we think we're going to start to see the impact in the price data in April. I would not be surprised to see, you know, the orders and shipments data in April and May start to deteriorate. Now, I think there is going to be something of a lag before we get to consumption and then the labor market. But I would expect that May, June, July consumption data facing some price increases starts to look a little soft. And I would think expect the labor market in June, July, August, so the data released July, August, September, starts to reflect more of the weakening in aggregate demand and the overall economy that we think is going to unfold. But, you know, these things are going to come in stages. My guess is the May data on net's probably going to look okay, which has implications for how you might think about the June FOMC meeting. But overall, we do think you're going to start to see more and more inkling of it. I mean, we're already seeing front running in the trade data. You're already seeing a lot of concerns in survey data. When we get to the hard data, it's a little bit more of a question and it will lag. But we do think you're going to start to see some of these price effects as early as next week's CPI release.
And when, if at all, do you think that will elicit a policy response from the Fed?
Well, I think they're in a very difficult situation waiting to see what the magnitudes, both of the policies, but also the economic impacts might be. You know, it's one thing to forecast, and Chair Powell has said this, fiscal policy, where we've got a long history, we've got a vast literature on multipliers, the different types of policies, and you can see a budget process unfold with a certain amount of structure and slow-moving discussion. Trade policy has come fast and furious, and there is no such deep literature to rely on for the impact. So they really are flying by the seat of their pants. The magnitude and scope, Chair Powell has already said in April, was larger than they had anticipated, and that would likely have larger than anticipated effects on inflation and slower growth. But how much, the degree, the duration, I mean, all of that is incredibly uncertain, which I think is going to force them to be relatively reactive instead of proactive. So if they do end up lowering rates, say, to protect or insulate the economy from a downturn, I think they're going to have to wait until they see real economic damage being done.
Perhaps taking the conversation back into markets, Barney, one of the challenges of the last few weeks is that we've also been in the middle of Q1 reporting season, a raft of CEOs standing up talking about how they see the world and commenting in particular around the tariff or potential tariff impacts corporates could see. How do you see the outlook for corporate earnings from here?
Quite different from what we've seen in Q1, right? Because as you rightly said, thus far, the earnings season's actually gone quite well. And the market seems to be taking cue from that. And I dare say that's a little bit myopic, because if you look out 12 months, the market expects earnings of low double digits growth in the S&P. But we think that's high by a margin, right? I mean, if these tariffs, even if they do decline to 50, 60% tariffs for China, 10% universal tariffs, as long as these tariffs do stay in place, we think that the hit to domestic demand is going to be quite strong. Both Aaron and Jonathan have made the point that GDP will probably be the wrong lens to look at things from, because it's going to be supported by a collapse in imports and therefore a big pickup in net trade. Almost exactly the opposite of what we have seen in Q1 in terms of GDP, where you front ran imports, and as a result of that, net trade was negative and deeply negative, and overall GDP was hit. We think we'll see the opposite probably starting Q3. And if domestic demand gets hit starting Q3, as John expects it will, then that will begin to tell on the markets very quickly. And we think it would not be surprising at all if, instead of being low double digits, earnings growth in the S&P 500 is low single digits. And that, as earnings expectations continue to ratchet down, that would be negative for stocks. So we do think that these levels that the market has gone back to, and we're recording this on the 6th of May, we think that these levels are ones that we think are too high for the macro reality of these tariffs. So from an earnings perspective, we're expecting Q2 will be fine, but Q3 onwards, we'll see significant downdraft of earnings. But it's not just an earnings problem, it's also a valuation problem. Today, the market is valued at 20.7 times high earnings numbers. So valuations also need to adjust.
One of the challenges, clearly, is global GDP growth, as you've already outlined to an extent, Aaron. One of the other counterbalances to a lower GDP growth is the potential productivity gains we could see from AI, given where we are in that cycle. How do you weigh out those two counterbalances? And do you think actually AI is a counterbalance to any effects of deglobalization that we've talked through here?
Well, not on the horizon that these tariffs impact our forecast, right? So we have the bulk of these tariffs sort of playing out over the next four quarters, this slightly long tail. So you know, probably through late 26. And then, you know, by the time we get to late 26, early 27, where I think the bulk of the impact is sort of behind us at that stage. I think, you know, reset sort of spending and consumption levels lower. And we start to sort of get by it. We get the stimulus kicking in, all that sort of get us back to something close to trend. The impact of AI on the data, in my mind, is much later, right? I just don't think we see a lot of evidence yet of it. I think the adoption speed is still very, very low. I mean, everyone can sort of see in their own organization how slow and difficult it is to roll this stuff out. But there's also, you know, more fundamental problem that the national account statistics are not actually going to capture, I think, a lot of the actual productivity gains from AI because of the way things are measured. It's just, you know, it's measured on a cost basis, not an output basis. So example I like to use is if I write 10 times as many papers, but my wages go down, then the national accounts will say that I've become less productive. So that's a whole separate discussion, not for here and now, Paul, but I think this is a late, you know, 2020 story rather than something that's going to help us out the next 2 years.
John, what happens next? We're at a point at which we've seen a rollback. We've seen the initial policy response and how other countries have or haven't responded. What happens next to your mind, particularly from a US policy perspective or from the US administration perspective? What should we be watching for?
Well, I think it's kind of a misnomer they've rolled all that much back. I mean, they postponed the reciprocal tariffs. But other than that, that in itself was really a rotation of the, you know, sort of roughly, you know, 25 individual country, you know, specific tariffs into larger tariffs on China. I mean, overall, the level, the notional tax is not actually that much changed, even though it does sound in the communications like there has been a rollback. I think the question now is, you know, what happens in these negotiations? I mean, are they seem to be progressing with bilateral negotiations. Do these reduce the existing tariffs, or do they merely prevent the snapping back of those tariffs that have been postponed until July 9th? I think that's an open question. And in some of the discussions, it does sound like there could be retaliation to come. For example, if the trade talks fail, the EU is now, you know, threatened tariffs on certain exports from the U.S. So I think there's still very much an open question about the timing and pace of these negotiations and then what actually happens after. Because the communications from the administration do not seem to want or indicate that there is going to be a walking back of any of the tariffs from the current levels, except potentially for China. So we'll have to see what ends up. But the communications we're hearing are not that. I mean, we don't expect the tariffs to go away. That does not seem to be the communications we're getting. We'll see what kind of adjustments are made. But we're also expecting more tariffs. There's pharmaceutical tariffs, chips tariffs, coppers. I mean, they've got a range of other investigations of the items still to be tariffed potentially. So there's a significant amount of uncertainty. And whether or not we actually go much lower from here is really actually pretty unclear, I think.
In that environment, Barno, it seems as though markets are disconnected from the current macro outlook. What's the best way to position?
So we're pretty defensive on equities right now, both in terms of just expectations of overall return, but also in terms of the sectors that we are in. We are overweight Europe at this point, which is a bit of an anomaly if you think about the large swath of history, because Europe has higher operational leverage than does the US, except that the US's starting points of earnings expectations and valuations are much too high. So I think that's why this break from history where US underperforms Europe over the tactical horizon. I want to be careful in saying that, right? This is the tactical horizon. I'm not saying that after 10, 20 years of outperforming, the US is now going to underperform for the next two decades. That's definitely not the case. That's not our view. Our view is that there is a catch down of US growth, of US valuations, of US earnings expectations, and through that, the S&P underperformed. So we are looking for downside in equities over the next 3 to 6 months, and we are a buyer of bonds and dips.
And aren't any other particular signals you'll be watching for, you and the macro team?
No, so I think, you know, the most asked question is really along the lines of, you know, when exactly do these tariffs show up in the data? And I think the difficulty there is like all the stuff that's outside the model. So will we see shipping disruption, right? There's all kinds of stories about orders being canceled. Will we see the impact of small, low margin firms that don't have enough working capital to actually pay for the tariffs, and that creating some kind of cascading effect in supply chain? So that's really, I think, where a lot of the uncertainty is. Like, this is something that hasn't happened in 100 years. You don't really know how it sort of reverberates through the economy. So we'll be looking at just the incoming data and a lot of those type of things. And one thing I'd say is I've never read as much equity research as I am reading right now, because I think a lot of the information is actually coming from the CFOs and the CEOs and the firms on the ground who are actually having to pay these tariffs. And they, I think, are having discussions with suppliers, et cetera. So that's really where all the information is. So those are the type of things I'm looking at.
Gentlemen, I appreciate all of your time. I have one more question before we close. When I go back a month ago, the stated aim of the tariff announcements on Liberation Day was, in many senses, to reorder global trade and bring manufacturing back to the US. 1 month on, perhaps almost a yes, no answer from each of you, your sense of how successful that's going to be and how we judge that success. Perhaps a question to all three of you.
We have been tracking corporate onshoring announcements for, I think, about a decade. And what you will, what you see when you look at those trackers is, so it's not a yes or no, sorry, Paul. But so when you look at those trackers, you see a lot of firms will, you know, say what I think the politicians want to hear is that, yes, I commit to building a factory, you know, in 3 years' time, et cetera. And then in reality, those announcements or those mentions sort of go away quite quickly for most sectors, not all sectors. So I think we'll get a couple of announcements. I think we won't be able to disentangle whether that was the intent anyway to build a particular factory in a particular place. But on the whole, it is just not economically viable to move, I think, a lot of the manufacturing production that has moved offshore back onshore to the U.S.
Yeah, I don't know how they're going to judge it, Paul. I mean, if I go back to, I actually originally was an academic labor economist, having done research on labor supply, retirement. You know, I think about the literatures on everything from the Job Training Partnership Act. You know, I contributed to the social program evaluations that were being done in the 1990s. I was doing research on labor supply as the manufacturing shock was negatively affecting and contributing to the long run declines in prime age men's participation. I don't know that this retrenchment of globalization is necessarily going to solve a really complicated set of problems or undo necessarily what's happened. I mean, there are other competing forces of globalization. There are other transitions that workers may need to make in terms of upskilling. And the scale of the problem is easier to look at in terms of a manufacturing to services transition than it is in terms of many of the individual specific sectors that they're discussing. You know, these adjustments are long-lived and difficult. And when I think about the overall impact of potentially negatively impacting growth, which affects kind of a wide swath of the economy, we'll see. I mean, I'll keep an open mind as a researcher. I've been surprised in my career a lot, as a forecaster, even more so, I think. But I don't necessarily think this is going to cure all the ills of the despondent, displaced manufacturing workers and what that has represented and accumulated to over the last 20 years.
Has Barney the final global perspective on the same question? How do you judge it, and what do you think?
I'd agree with what Aaron and John have said. The only hope, and I'll keep this brief, would be that through Trump's first term, although you didn't see a lot of onshoring, you did see a fair amount of nearshoring. So, many Chinese companies opened up shop in Mexico, some of them with Spanish names. And now the U.S. administration is really clamping down on that, right? So there is a possibility that some companies don't set up shop this time in Mexico, but come to the U.S. But broadly, I completely agree with the comments that John and Aaron have made. I don't think we are likely to see a renaissance in U.S. manufacturing. I don't think we're going to see a renaissance in U.S. investment for these reasons, for tariffs lead to this. You know, if technology completely changes and you have extraneous circumstances that lead to productivity in the U.S. going up as a result of artificial intelligence and that bringing investment back home, that's a completely separate point. But I think the stated intention of the tariffs to reshore, onshore, I don't think that's likely to be met. Maybe a little bit of nearshoring leading to onshoring, but that's marginal stuff. I don't think it moves the needle for the whole economy.
Gentlemen, thank you all for joining me. Clearly, we are in a period now of higher volatility, of policy uncertainty, and of a moment in which the picture from a macro and a micro perspective are very much disconnected. Thank you for joining us on the UES Research Pod Hub. This has been an overview of where we stand on tariffs with myself, Paul Schneider from Product Management, and three of my global macro colleagues. We hope you've enjoyed the episode, and please do tune in and share this episode with friends and colleagues. We look forward to hearing you on future episodes.
This content has been prepared by UBS AG, its subsidiaries, and or affiliates, and is purely informational in nature. It is not investment research and does not contain an investment recommendation nor investment or professional advice. It is not an offer or solicitation to engage in any investment activity, and you should seek your own financial, tax, and legal advice before engaging in any such activity. UBS has no responsibility to you in relation to this content. It has no regard to your personal circumstances or investment objectives, and receiving it does not imply any form of client relationship with UBS for any legal, regulatory, or tax purpose. This content is not intended for distribution into any jurisdiction where to do so would be contrary to law or regulation. UBS does not accept any liability over the content of such material or reliance upon any information contained herein. The views and opinions expressed by any guest speaker or third party are not those of UBS. Accordingly, UBS does not accept any liability over any such views and opinions expressed by such persons. This content is the valuable intellectual property of UBS, and UBS specifically prohibits the redistribution of it in whole or in part without its prior written permission. UBS 2025, the key symbol, and UBS are among the registered and unregistered trademarks of UBS. All rights reserved.